an A&E original podcast.
I have a secret.
Go.
Your girl can't dance.
Yes, you can.
No, I can tell you the moment I realized. I was like 22 and I was like, you don't have rhythm.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to The Table Is Ours, the podcast where we discuss all things Black identity. From Black success to Black achievement and Black vulnerability, we discuss it all at this table because the table is ours. With me today is my favorite co-host, Miss Amira Lawali.
Hey, girl.
Hey, boo. If Amira were an anthem, she would be We Found Love by Rihanna, because I feel like that is such a moment.
That's my song.
Fist pumping, arms raising. That has your energy written all over it, girl.
That is my energy. And you know what dance I do to that song? I do that like white girl sway to it. Da-na-na. It comes natural to that song.
Not the Harry Styles Wispy in the Wind sway.
Wispy in the Wind? I become a Wispy in the Wind girl. A Wispy in the Wind girl automatically.
I see it.
And this is my amazing co-host, Kirby Dixon.
Hey, girl, hey.
If Kirby were an anthem, she'd be also a Rihanna anthem.
Duh.
It'd be, bitch, better have my money for so many reasons. Let me tell you.
Hey.
Kirby's energy is queen of, like, pay me what you owe me.
Yes, you better come correct.
We can chill, but come correct.
Yes. Love it.
And you know I have to ask you every week the same question. How are you?
Ooh, girl, I am good this week. You want to know why?
Why?
Because I figured out at the end of quarantine, a quarantine hack. And you know what that is?
What is it?
Taking dance breaks in the middle of the day. You just get up, you blast your favorite song, and you just do a little jig for about 5 minutes. I promise you, it's like an instant mood booster.
Kirby, is that what you're doing between meetings when I can't reach you? Like, is that what you're doing when you don't answer?
Absolutely. I'm getting my dance on, girl. I gotta shake away all the bad juju happening throughout the week.
Noted. Anytime Kirby does not answer, she's pop, lock, and dropping it.
Yes.
Noted. I see it.
Yes. That is it. That is the quarantine hack I'd like to share with you and everyone else that's listening out there, because I promise you, ooh, it'll instantly lift your day. But I would like to clarify, am I a dancer? No. Do I love to dance? Yes.
Liar.
A big, resounding yes.
You know, Kirby, I think it's actually insulting that you constantly say, I'm a little dancer, I'm not a singer, when you literally do both. It is so insulting to us that are tone deaf and uncoordinated. So,
you know what, sis? How lucky am I to have a friend who thinks so highly of me? Because how you see me and how I see myself do not match. But that's okay. That's what we have friends for.
You know who else loves dance?
Who?
Your sister and dance girl, Susan Kelechi Watson.
Yes. Susan was so amazing. You know her from Louie. You know her from The Blacklist. You know her from Law and Order. But perhaps most notably, you know her as the iconic, the beautiful, the incredible portrayal of Miss Beth on NBC's This Is Us.
Beth is my girl.
She is such a mood.
But you know what? Susan is my girl too now. We talked Black love. We talked spirituality. We talked about her top 5 MCs of all time.
Yes, Susan the rapper.
Susan the rapper. Susan Kelechi Watson. Let's get it.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We are so excited to speak with you. I don't think we could, like, I can't even explain it.
Perfect timing also.
Oh, nice. Nice. Happy to be here, man. This is awesome.
Thanks for coming. And I don't want to fan out too much too early. So I'm just going to dive into our first question. I am taming myself for you, Susan. So please know that.
Listen, do you. I'm here for all of it.
Yeah,
for
don't
it.
Worry if we start crying in the middle of this interview.
It will come. But we like to start every episode the same and ask the same question because this last year has been a lot. Mm-hmm. All of us have kind of gone through it in different ways. So how are you? How are you doing?
Better. That's the word of the year. Better.
That's good.
Last year was a lot. You know, it was last year into this year, actually, because I think it may have hit me even harder this year. The pandemic and, you know, everything that we kind of had to go through and adjust to.
Yeah.
But because, I don't know, maybe there was a sense of last year, like maybe it'll be over or, you know, or something. But when you're in it for a while, you know, it wears on you in a different way. Right. So there was that. And then there was so many events last year that were just, you know, crippling in a lot of ways and compounded with the pandemic, but so many wonderful things too. So there was this yin and yang going on last year. So I can't like discount last year at all. Like it wasn't what I would mark as like a terrible year, but it was definitely a year with some terrible events, right?
Yeah, right.
But this year, it was just time's up. I was like, how long are we about to be up in the pandemic? You know, and I just felt like, it's time to, you know, with the vaccination and, you know, and being on the show and working through a pandemic and shooting a film through a pandemic and all of these things really teaches you like what really goes into being safe and how to protect yourself and get through something becomes the minutia of the day. Like it's every little thing that you do. So I'm speaking to you from perspective now. Where I'm saying it's better. It's better.
Good. That's all we can ask for.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I think Amir and I both just go day by day, hour by hour. So for you mm-hmm. saying better,
yeah,
that's how we feel too. So we totally understand and appreciate that.
Yeah.
We have so much to talk to you about. We want to know you and we want to know about the characters that you portray as well. But we're going to start it off giving a huge shout out to Howard University, where you graduated from.
Hey, you.
For undergrad, yeah. And we actually just saw Felicia Rashad's incredible news about becoming the Dean of Fine Arts for Howard.
Yeah.
But for your MFA program, you actually transitioned to going to NYU. So just wondering, you know, having graduated in undergrad from an HBCU, how did Howard prepare you for the real world? And what was that transition going from an HBCU to a predominantly white institution for grad school?
Yeah, there was definitely a shift in terms of like, because, you know, Howard and DC itself at that time, it's up until recently, it was, you know, a very chocolate city. So it was, and not for nothing, everywhere I grew up before then was that. So it was the first time in a long time that I was a minority at going into NYU. But I will say that Howard really prepared me in terms of a confidence in self, because it helped me to know myself deeper. I think when you begin to learn where you came from and understand who you are culturally, where you are, like who you are in the diaspora of the whole thing, it gives you a different perspective, you know, a perspective that is not normally offered. And so I came into NYU, honestly, with a lot of confidence. I was just, they used to comment on it. They're like, how are you just walking up in here so confident? But I didn't even think about it. Like to me, in my mind, I wasn't like, I'm mad confident coming up into NYU. They just got to give me mine, you know? And it
as
wasn't
they should.
That. It, yeah. But it wasn't that for me. It really, I didn't think of it that way. It just felt as it should be, you know? And I don't know if that threw people off, you know?
Yeah.
I guess they feel, you know, as a very young 20 something that you're supposed to be, you know, a certain type of way. I don't know what it was. I'm not going to put words in people's mouths, but I do know that the groundwork happened at Howard.
Let's go back even further. How did you get into acting? Like, how did you know that that was your lane?
You know, I said a prayer about it. I'm, you know, super spiritual, so I pray about everything, right? And I said a prayer about it when I was like 3 years old. Like, I was like, kind of on my bed in Brooklyn, kind of, you know, doing like this with your legs against the bed, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt in my spirit of like, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? And I want to be an entertainer. You know, I that's what I want to do. And I danced, which I love. I love that form of expression. And I love to sing, but I'm not one of the best singers, you know, and I wasn't one of the best dancers, though I did those things. Well, I did those things well, or to an extent, well enough. Do you know what I mean? But when it came into acting, it was like, no, this feels right. Like it was like the right shoes to walk through the journey in, you know, and it kept being affirmed, like along the way, it just kept being affirmed. Nobody was like, girl, that's the only thing you want to do. You know, I never got that. And also there was something just in me, in my spirit, that was like, you didn't even have to tell me. I felt like, oh, okay. Yeah, I know that this is what it is. So I still enjoy doing those other things as well, and primarily dance, you know, but it became, it's the acting for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I am always so envious of people that know what they want to do that early on, because that was not my reality. Like, yeah. I was still navigating after college, like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I knew I wanted to work in media and work in television, but it was like, okay, what in media and television do you want to do? So thank you for sharing that. I don't want to take you back to your 3-year-old self, but do you remember what that prayer was?
It wasn't even a prayer. It was just a listening. It was a listening. And sometimes that's it more than anything, right? It's like listening and responding. Sometimes we feel like we have to say, and sometimes it's more about receiving, right? So it was definitely a receptive moment. And I think as a child, it is probably the most precious time that could happen, because you're so not inundated with all the voices that say, I don't know where that came from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like,
or you can't do that. Yeah.
Right. All the cynicism, you know, I didn't have any. So I would like to tell you that the first reality shows happened in my mind in the 80s, because I really was like, I would walk out of my bedroom and go into my family's living room, and whatever was going on, you know, it's like 6 or 7 of us, you know, so whatever was going on, I made it in my mind into a TV show. Like, we were just having this reality show. And so it was all a scene to me.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And then I would go into my room, and it was the first confessional. Like, I would go into the room and talk about, like, did you see what just happened with my brother?
Oh, you were born for this.
Yeah. Born star.
So, you know, it just became in my brain, and it was just so fun. And mind you, I thought I was going to do a lot of things between them, because I didn't have an example in my life of anybody who was doing that. And, you know, my family and everything wanted me to be secure in a real job. And so they knew that I could write, or, you know, other things. So they were trying to get me in that lane. And I sort of went in that lane. But I was so unhappy. It just unfolded the way it had to unfold. But, you know, it's timing for me, 3 for you, you know, after college, it is what it is. As long as it happens, you know.
Amen to that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So question, at 3, you knew what you wanted, but like, when was the first time you actually saw someone that looked like you on TV and was like, oh, I can do this?
Oh, the first time I was like, I can do this. Wow. I don't know if I said it like that, but I will tell you the people who made me want to do it. Mm-hmm. I think it was that whole era of like, from Cosby to Different World to Martin to, yes. It was like that whole, you know what I mean?
It
like,
was yes. The golden age.
The yes. golden age of Black television. Yes.
It really was. Because I was like, oh God. Like, I remember episodes and being a kid, like with my brother, like my younger brother, and us watching things and like jumping up and like cheering. And like, it was, I remember going to school and retelling Martin jokes, you know what I'm saying? Like to my homegirl, yeah. like we made it up. You know, we were in the hallways doing it, like we made it up. And it was that type of influence. It just felt so real.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful, because we talk about the importance of representation on television all of the time. And it's those moments and those types of shows where you realize, like, wow, it's almost like you're looking at a reflection or a mirror of your own household. And there's just so many things you innately relate to without even realizing, like, wow, this was written for television, but how significant is it for you to be able to see yourself on TV and your family on TV?
Yeah, and be able to like react and respond, and just also like have the community to talk about it. Everybody wanted to talk about it, and you know, it was a really cool celebratory thing that we didn't realize we were celebrating, but you know, in the end you were, yeah.
Before we move on, I kind of want to get into your spirituality, and I love that you said that you kind of have
shared it, like, since you were three and it's been part of you. Do you take that into work with you? Is that something that you separate? Like, is that something that's spoken about, like, on every set?
You know what? No, I'm a Christian, and I always personally felt like there was this sense of, like, you have to say and do and be it, and people need to know, and you have to... And I never found myself fitting into that mold. So I always kind of felt like, yo, if I really do practice that in my life, if I can just be a reflection of it, mm-hmm. you know, then I think that may be the route that I want to go. It's just in me. It's just like the skin I'm in, you know, it's just, it kind of just is what it is. It comes with the territory, I guess. It's the best yeah. way to say it, you know? So there's no separation. There's no separation. It all goes into everything. And even if I play somebody who's not, you know, then it still will inform whatever I do, because I'm going to do it in a way that is honest, and so that people can get a reflection of who they are and maybe a better understanding of who they are. And I think that that's a gift. I think that that's something that's divine. You have to trust that people can learn from anything. You can't dictate what people learn from. You know, we've been put into a world where a lot of things happen and you can have any interpretation of anything, you know? So I feel like I wasn't shot into a Christian world. So, like, you know what I mean? We're here to decipher it for ourselves, and we have the freedom to do that. So I don't want to take that from anybody either. But my prayer beforehand would be that I pray that I'm like a truthful reflection, you know, so that somebody can see something in this that feels honest.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's such a grace and just like a loveliness that you portray, not only in your own life, like when we're looking, you know, watching your social media and seeing the way in which you're dancing and having fun on social media, but also in the way that you portray Beth on This Is Us, which is, we adore her.
Beth is my home girl, okay?
Beth is home girl, mom, sister, friend, right. Confidant. She is everything.
She's it.
And she's been it from the beginning, which is rare.
Sometimes I'm like, what would Beth do? Because I had to like tame it back.
So wondering, as we kind of pivot into the This Is Us conversation, how did you land that role? And what an iconic role to be playing on television now.
Yeah, I landed it through an audition, to tell you the truth. Like, it was just... like your regular pilot audition, you know? And
that's crazy, because Beth is not regular. She's not a regular character.
It was just a regular audition. And like, I went in and did it. I kept getting callbacks. And then finally, they wanted me to come out to LA and read with Sterling. And I did that. And then it was after that that I got the call that I got it. But I felt when I did it, I left it all on the table. And Beth only started out as two scenes. So I really didn't even know who she was, you know, and I'm not sure that they fully knew who she was. So it was a lot of, once I became the character, of us developing, you know, who she is.
I'm going to sidetrack. My love for Beth came immediately, but I remember the exact moment that I was like, that's my girl. And it was when Kate's character, you could tell that she was like intimidated by how great Beth was. I said, ooh, a queen. I said, I need this level of intimidation. I want people to be like, I am nervous. I'm like, yes, you are.
Nervous. And she's literally just being herself, her authentic, beautiful queen self.
I like that people, you know, feel like, you know, they can look at Beth and think, yeah, that's my sis. Like, I would want to know her or be friends with her, or, because she's like a reflection of so many different women in my life that I've known, that I've seen, so many different mothers, just women who are on their grind in life, people who have dreams and hope. She's just this compilation of so many things in life. She and I are like, we don't live the same life at all. You know, I don't have anything similar to Beth in my life, but it's a compilation of, there's things that I've learned that I feel like, oh, that's this character. And it just felt right for her. You know, it just felt right for her. And I've played a lot of course, you know, different women throughout my career, but none of them have been like her, and she hasn't been like any of the others. You know, it's just the kind of the way she came out. So it's really cool to hear that. I love it. I love that people identify with her, and like, you know, and like, we do it for the culture. We do it for every part of it. You know, whatever it is, we're always looking like for what's going on in the world right now and how people are feeling now, and how to say that again in like an honest way without judgment, you know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Both Amir and I were watching the episode last night, and it was so funny because I'm always so interested in how these productions have been navigating and pulling from the world in which we're living now and the pandemic and things like that. So even seeing Beth going through the close of dance school and how you're teaching digitally, and how the class starts from 10 students then whittles down to 3 students. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just really impressive. And This Is Us, and I think you in particular in portraying Beth have done such a beautiful job at like literally making her a real person. She feels real. She is real.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's the goal. I think this is goal. It's funny. Every time I think, what's the goal of the show? I just go back to the title. I'm like, oh, This Is Us. All right. So we gotta be us. You know what I mean? Like, we gotta be us. All right, let's do that. So I'm so happy. I can't tell you. It never gets old. And we've been hearing it for like 5 years. And that's not to say we've been hearing it for 5 years. You know what I mean?
Like, also, hype it up. That's what it is. You have. You do it. You deserve. Talk that talk, girl. No.
It's to say we've been hearing it for 5 years, and it still hasn't gotten old. It still hasn't become like, I know. You know, it's like, man, I can't believe people are still saying this 5 years later, and it's still as cool as it was. So as much as we can, it's going to be that until the wheels fall off.
Yeah. So just to go back a little bit, we both read that before you booked This Is Us, you were kind of at a breaking point and you were going to go off to Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Montreal is nice.
It's so nice. But was that kind of a moment where you were like, oh, I'm done with acting? And we're asking because it was about a week ago, we spoke to Uzo from Orange Is the New Black, and she booked Orange Is the New Black right before her breaking point, where she was like, I'm done.
I'm done. Yeah.
What was that breaking point like for you?
Terrible. It's just terrible. It's all, because you're like, oh, the dream's dashed. And then you're like, what am I going to do now? Like, I've literally spent my whole life gearing towards this and it didn't happen. I mean, how dare we think life stops after college or grad school or, you know what I mean, 30 or what, God forbid. Like, it just keeps going. You know what I mean? It just keeps going. Stuff keeps happening. And sometimes, you know, the secret is it actually gets better as you go. So, you know, not everything is like behind you, but it's hard to think that when you don't know that. And when you try so hard for so long, which is where I was at, I was just like, yo, I've been doing this for just too long. Somebody gonna have to convince me to side, because I can't. And, and I had to call people and, you know, have people in community around me who believed when I just didn't have the energy to, you know, that's always important, to have people who can keep speaking what it's supposed to be over you and to you while you don't have the energy. And then I was auditioning for my very good friend's play, and I was learning that I didn't get the part because my audition was so bad.
And oh no.
It was bad. I don't even know what happened. Don't ask me. And then I got a beep on the other line as I'm talking to her about how bad it was. And I was like, hold on, girl, let me just get this other line. And I clicked over, I'm like, hello. And they're like, with the last breath of my body. And they're like, oh, we just want to let you know you have a pin in you for the untitled Dan Fogelman project. I was like, okay, whatever. click back over. And I was like, girl. And I went back into this whole thing about how terrible that audition was. And on the other line, they're telling me, your life's about to change. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, so you just don't know. You just don't know.
Susan, are there unique challenges that Black women face specifically trying to break into the industry that perhaps your other counterparts that are going out for these different roles don't have to face?
I definitely felt it a lot in coming up and going through in this business. Definitely. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if I went out more than like 3-4 times for pilot season or something, I'd be like, wow, they sent me out like a white girl. Like, this is crazy, you know? And
yeah.
Meanwhile, my white counterparts, you know, were going out like 3-4 times a week.
Oh,
and wow. I sometimes was literally going out 3-4 times the entire pilot season. And half of that was for parts that says, you know, non-specific racial type or cultural type. Like,
yeah.
And then they inevitably went with, you know, specifically went with white. And mm-hmm. so it was really challenging. What I love now is that so many of us are on the producing side. So many of us are on the directing side. And so it's beginning to shift and people are understanding that people long for stories about Black people. They want to know. In the same way, like, I want to see Minari and I want to see, like, shows about, you know, the Asian community. Like, I'm curious. Like, it's not just us.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, I want to know what's going on over here, too.
Yeah.
So those things really interest me. There was a short limited series, and it was called Unorthodoxed.
Oh, I love that.
Netflix. Loved it, right? Because you never get mm-hmm. to see.
I was deep into that world.
Deep.
It was such, yeah.
It was so good.
And it was also like a world where, like, I was living in Brooklyn at the time. So I was like, I just, like, obviously I've seen this community, but I didn't know anything about the practices and enough about it. So I was like, thank you for giving me that glimmer in. Unorthodox was so good.
Yeah. And like me, of course, being from Brooklyn, living right up against that community or in the same community, you still don't know because they're so secretive about that life and seeing that. So the assumption that people outside of our culture would not be curious was silly to me. I was like, well, this don't make no sense. You know, I don't understand. Are we the only curious ones? And are we only placating to what white people want to see? Is that the totality of what's going to happen in entertainment? So it's something that I feel really passionate and really strongly about, is bringing these stories to life just so that we get the full range of what's out here in the world and what's going on.
Do you feel like that's shifted in the last few years, that we're able to tell different versions of our stories? Because for me, I feel like we're finally able to see different versions of Black. And that's mm-hmm. finally going to move forward. Like, whether it's Insecure or Michaela Cole being, like, super cringy. And I'm like, yes, cringy Black girl, do
yes.
you.
Euphoria.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, now we're getting all the stuff. Like, I remember when, you know, it was so limited. And so if one person came out and it didn't represent every Black person, it was like, tear them down. No, da, da, da. And it's like, well, no, let them live. And, like, we just need more people to come out with some different stories. Like, but that's the valid stories. People like it, you know, that opportunity should be there. So now that there's so many different ones, that's the road that we have to stay on, is, and the people are responding. People are responding. And I'm telling you, nothing says it louder than people putting money behind it. Nothing says it louder than
yeah.
fan bases and people coming out to support, because that people can't say no to numbers. You can't deny that. You can't deny money. You know what I mean? You can't deny it, that people are willing to say, yeah, I'll pay for that. I'll go see that. People are talking about it on social media. People are talking about it to their friends. People are like, what? That should have been nominated. Why not? That, you know, all that conversation just begins to validate exactly what we've been saying for so many years.
Exactly. And it's great now that you guys are building the table for each other. Actors are becoming, like you're saying, producers and directors. And if, you know, networks and these big companies are not making the content that we know we want to see and audiences want to see, then the creatives themselves are going to start making the content. And I'm so excited for us to get to a place where, you know, we're not sending, and agents aren't sending roles to their talent because they think they fit a mold, right? I want to see Susan as the love interest of the sitcom. I want to see Susan as Wonder Woman, because she can be that and is that. That's what I'm so excited for.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the thing. Yeah. It's like, as much as I love Beth, you don't do it to stop at Beth. She's just one of the people, you know, yeah. But as an actor, it's like, yeah, no, Marvel or yeah, no, comedy or rom-com. Yeah, no, you know, lawyer or agent or, you know what I mean? Spy, whatever it is, all of that. You know, that's all in the bag too.
We do have a little bit of a silly question for you, and it's an observation that we made on This Is Us. Uh-huh. So normally, and we're getting better at it now, but normally the wigs on Black women in Hollywood, they still have a long way to go. However, on This Is Us, this family, you all slay. All of the time.
Y'all's hair is always great.
It's always great. And This Is Us is the first show that I've really recognized where it's the opposite. So the white talent on the show, the wigs aren't that great. Like,
no. Rebecca. Okay,
Rebecca,
look.
As an older.
Look. Rebecca has grown on me, but I genuinely feel like her hair is a punishment for what she did to Randall.
That's true.
That's why I'm like, no! Okay, girl. Sometimes her wig as she older, I'm like, you deserve that.
No, I always think her wigs look so good. Really? You know what? I will say this. Sometimes it depends on, like, because wigs are so sensitive, right? If you get the wrong backlighting or whatever, it's just, it ruins like the illusion of it. So there's a lot of different things that go into it. I do love her wig, and I thought y'all were going to say, oh, we all equal up in here, but
whoop. No, we noticed.
There's something for Rebecca's wig up in here.
No, you guys are slaying the whole show.
Yes, and I also noticed, like, they switch y'all's hair up like Black women do. Mm-hmm. So are your hairstylists and makeup artists Black?
Yes. When I came on the show, that was not the case. By the second season, it became the case. And I'm grateful that they heard me. You know what I mean? When I asked. And for me, I did my hair a lot the first season. And nobody, you know, it wasn't a thing. You know what I mean? It was like, I thought this is what we did so long anyway. Yeah. You just kind of take care of it yourself. But then it felt like, all right, but that shouldn't be. So let's do this. And everybody was so generous about that. So I definitely don't want that to come off like a judgment. I really did have people who supported that decision and made it happen like that.
That's amazing.
No joke. And I know a lot of people don't have that. So big up to Dan and all the execs and everybody who listened, and my head of hair, Michael Wrights, and all you people were like, no, that, like, Michael goes to the community and goes, gets my wigs. You know what I mean? And like, Renee Green, who does my wigs and my hair, she preps them, she does all the things. And she is somebody that we brought on after trying a few folks out to do hair, who does my hair. And then there's Jameka, who was doing the girls' hair, because I was like, if Beth is laid, we got to get the girls laid too. So
yes, exactly. The girls are always laid.
Yeah.
They were very amenable to bringing somebody on for the girls as well. And so for me, switching up the hair was something that I did as a shout out, just a silent little shout out to Black women. I knew if we saw it, we'd be like, oh yeah, that's what we do. You know what I mean?
So we saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, real recognized real.
Yeah. Real recognized real. Yeah, it's like game recognized game. I was like, exactly. I don't have to say nothing. They're going to be like, all right, yeah, we see that.
Even the bonnet. I love a good bonnet appreciation.
That was an incorporation, and I'd seen people begin to dabble with that, and I was like, that's real. Like, people need to know, like, yeah, like, this is, it's beautiful. What grows out of our head naturally is beautiful. And this is kind of what we do to protect it and to do our thing. And I was just talking to Dan last night, our showrunner and our creator, about how the whole hair thing started for me. And the audition that I did, I came in and I had just, this was a couple years after. So I went, I cut it all off in 2013, I went completely natural. And I got the audition like 2015. And so I had curly, thick, don't get it twisted, curly, you know, hair. And I had kind of scooped it all up and put it like in a curly bun at the top of my head for the audition. By the time I got out to LA, I had these long braids. And I said, I just kind of went to the reading like, all right, well, listen, if they see me and they say, take it out, just take it out, you know? But if they see me and say, oh, that's cool, and this could be a different side of it. I wanted them to, because we didn't know who she was yet as a character. So I just was like, hey, play with it, you know? And I went to the read through and I remember walking in and I had on like this whole outfit. It just did not look like Beth, but it was very like suit, right? And so they saw me and they looked me up and down. They're like, it looks really nice. And I was like, thank you. And I'm telling y'all, that was the green light I needed. I never asked again. I never said anything. I just every week changed it and nobody said anything.
I love that.
And I remember my showrunner told someone in the writer's room that he like enjoyed every week wondering like what Beth was going to do her hair this week. And we joke that Dan Fogelman knows more about black hair than he ever thought he would.
Good.
In his life.
I love a good lesson.
Yeah, he knows so much about it now.
You learn how to compliment and how when not to say anything at all. Yeah. But I love that because, I mean, there's so much as black women, our hair is a big part of our identity. And I'm so happy that even in you speaking up and having a showrunner who recognizes that if I'm going to portray a real black family on this show, hair just comes with that. That's a part of the conversation. That's a part of portraying true figures on screen. And there's so many shows out there now that unfortunately don't show black women in their true light or black families in their true light, right? They don't look at us as, I don't want to say human beings, because that's not the case all the time anymore, but they don't show us as multifaceted as we really are. So wondering, in portraying Beth, did you feel like a weight or a pressure with portraying a black woman in a black family in a multifaceted way?
Not at all.
That's good to hear.
Not at all.
Good. You don't deserve any of that stress.
No. You know, I'm, you know, like for real, it's the job that we have is actors. And yes, there's a certain presentationalness nature mm-hmm. to it. Cause you know, whatever, you got to act for people, but you can't take the people in with you while you act, you know? Cause then you can't do it. It's like,
that's a great lesson.
You know what I mean? So not at all. It was just, I felt like as long as we remain truthful, all that's going to be there. You don't have to overthink representation. I'm never going to walk into a room and not be black. And I'm very aware of that.
Yes.
So whatever comes out my mouth is something about the complexity of black people anytime, any day. So why do I don't need to think about that. That's just something you walk in and you just are.
Exactly.
So anything that you just are, enjoy that. Let that be. Let that sit. You don't even have to overthink that. It's the other stuff I got to do. And now I got to think, why is she going to the store when she really wants to have this conversation with Randall? That's the stuff I'm thinking about. You know what I mean? But being a complex black woman, you're going to get, that comes with it.
Yeah, I think that's good for us to know too, because I feel like sometimes Amir and I, even being on the corporate side of the television industry, there's so much weight and pressure at times and feeling like we need to put the entire culture on our back.
Yeah.
But now as I've gotten older and I'm growing in my career, I feel like I'm just navigating this world as myself, and whatever I can do to make it a little bit easier for someone that looks like me to get their foot in the door or see representation as hopefully a future executive or whatever it may be in this industry, then we are doing our job, sis. We are exactly where we're supposed to be.
Absolutely, sis. That's it.
But I'll be honest, I'm still at that point where I'm like, we get asked questions for everything that is black, because there's not many of us on this side of the industry as well. And I'm in that space where I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna do my own thing. I'm Amira, who happens to be black. Like, I will live my life. But then if someone asks me a question, I immediately go to every single group chat and be like, I can't speak for every black person and I don't want to get this wrong. Right. And it's a little stressful.
Well, but that's a learning. That's a teaching for those people asking you those questions to do the same. I go to my group chats exactly. for a lot of things. My perspective is, we're not monolithic. I think everyone knows that at this point. So they got to learn to go to the group chats too. Go to the study groups. I don't know.
Shout out to the group chats for
they really hold us down.
Getting us through work every day.
Right, exactly that. But you know, your opinion can be what it is. And guess what? Because it came out of your mouth, that's a part of, you know, again, the whole, it's a part of the whole, right?
Yeah.
And then you can do your due diligence if you feel like, but you know what? I want to check in because I want to see what the majority is saying on a particular issue. Then you can do your due diligence. But like, to feel like, man, yo, I got to make sure every time I speak, like I got it right for the people.
That's heavy.
Yeah, I think that's just, it's taking on something that I don't know that any one person can do anyway. You know, I feel like the fact that you guys are doing this and being here and I get to come on and be like, all right, two beautiful sisters in here. You know what I mean? And like, we at the table. Like that in itself is a moment, you know, that resonates.
Oh, that makes me feel so good.
I know, it made me so happy.
Because that's what we did it for.
Yeah. And the skin is popping and we didn't even go there yet. I mean, we're going to get there.
Your skin. We can talk about it if you want to talk about it.
Your skin. I can't. I must know. I must know the secret. Anyway, we'll talk.
We will.
I know. I'm like, when you popped up, I was like, I need to ask for your scooting routine. But I was trying to stay focused.
Hello. Like, and hair regimen.
I was like, you just look so good. Like, oh, teach me your ways because quarantine has been very hard. I had to like grow up.
Oh, it's been rough. Yeah. I have to get rid of quarantine face for sure. Yeah.
Just wondering, and to broaden it out a little bit into the industry a bit more, but one of the things that we love about This Is Us is they seem to do having really complicated conversations and themes on screen really, really well. And so wondering, like, what kinds of combos do you think we're seeing on television now that are important to be had? And how do we continue to kind of move the conversation forward from your perspective?
I think conversations without judgment are important to be had. That's one of the things that the show does a lot. It's like, how do we have this conversation and me not be judging you while I'm having it? And me not be kind of judging myself. Like, let's be like, all right, let's assume that I love you and you love me. So we're going to take that off the table. Let's assume that I respect you. It might not be love, it's respect. Let's assume I respect you and you respect me. Let's talk from that perspective. Rather than like, I don't even respect what you're talking about. And now you have to earn my respect on top of proving to me why you even have this feeling or what. So you can't even get to a conversation because people are like, well, now I'm looking at the way you're not respecting me. So I can't even hear what you're saying.
I always hear disrespect first. You're so right.
I hear disrespect first.
I'm always like, that sounds like a toot.
Right.
And that's all I care about.
That it's tone, right? Like you always hear how people say something.
Yes. It's not what you say. It's how you say it.
Exactly. It's how you say it. And like, I'm super addicted to like unsung Hollywood, anything. And like, what's the other one? It's not unsung. It's uncensored and all this kind of stuff. And I was hearing
Uncensored. Yep.
Yeah. I love those shows. And Jaleel White was just talking about, you know, when people call him Urkel, he's like, I'm not listening to you say Urkel. It's how you say Urkel. You know what I mean? Like, what exactly. Is your thought behind it? And like,
is it a nerdy inflection or?
Right. Or like, oh, you were that dude. And like, so I feel like our show has conversations that people normally would find hard because they don't like to walk into those conversations vulnerable.
Yeah.
You don't want to be vulnerable and have the race conversation. You want to come in heavy armor artillery. If these people say one thing, it's about to go down. You know, like that's the way we walk into a lot of things. And when you have a family, that's very destructive. So it's about people who are saying, yeah, we can have this conversation and I'm gonna let you know how it hurt me and I'm gonna let you know what you need to do and how maybe we can try to move forward. I'm not saying it's fixed, but this is how maybe we can move forward.
Yeah, coming from a place of empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And understanding and honesty and knowing I might not get it right, but guess what? This is a conversation that we need to have because this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah, this is how I feel. And I'm not gonna like bring any other of the stuff that can kind of pull us apart into it.
Exactly.
Which is hard, you know, it's a really, there's a certain amount of saying like, this is ideally the way we'd like to do it, right? But at least if you throw that into the conversation, people can see an example of like, hey, there is a way to have those conversations. And the show is so influential in that way that it has helped many people and families come together because they saw the show do it.
Yeah.
They show an example of it on the show. Yeah.
So I love that. And I also, what else is done so well on This Is Us? And this is where I'll be really honest. When This Is Us started, I didn't realize I was going to have like a great portrayal of Black love consistently. Like, yeah. I didn't know that. I was like, then the first episode, I said, voila, here, like, here it comes. So yeah. You mentioned having no pressure earlier, like you didn't feel the pressure to portray Beth as multifaceted. Did you feel any pressure to portray Black love a certain way?
We don't feel pressure. We enjoy it. We're like, oh, okay. Because we didn't know, you know, a lot of stuff. I think the assumption is that we know, like, oh, we know how people are going to see this. Or we know, we didn't know, you know what I mean? So when it happened, we were like, we became aware of it because there's only but so much you can turn off social and television and not know. But once we became aware of it, it was like, oh, really? That's what's going on here? All right, well, okay, I have no problem taking on that responsibility. Or if that's sort of the mantle that's on our relationship, cool, let's really enjoy that. Let's you know, deepen that, the moments that we can. Let's really, you know, and it doesn't hurt that I love Sterling to death and we have a great relationship. We both genuinely love each other.
Yeah, your chemistry is magnetic.
Yeah, yeah, that don't hurt. So the fact that we do have such a love and respect for one another and love these characters together helps it a lot. But by no means, I mean, when I tell you, it couldn't be further from, the only thing I remember saying when we started, for whatever reason, when we first started back in 2016, I was binging Martin crazy before we started shooting. And I did not know why, but all I wanted to watch was Martin. And I remember saying to Sterling, when we first walked in our trailers, I knocked on his and we started talking. I said, bro, if we could do anything close to Martin and Gina, then we've done something. You know, I remember saying that. And he was like, word, I got you. Like, you know, it's like, we just had that vibe. And it was like, I don't know why. Cause that was who that was for us, you know?
Y'all are my favorite Black TV couple of all time. Favorite.
Oh, thank you.
Did you have any others other than like Martin and Gina that you looked to?
That I looked, well, you know, we didn't have a bunch to go through.
I know.
That was that, you know, when I was younger, it was like Whitley and Dwayne. And there wasn't a ton that, you know, it stuck in my mind as like Black couple. You know what I mean? Because it may have been at a time where I was just looking at them as like the adults in the relationship or whatever it was. But for me, those particular couples felt like I was seeing an example of Black love, and really like in my mind was knowing, oh, love, like one and another. And it was translating in my mind that way. So those were the ones that did it for me.
Yeah. I do want to ask a little bit of a fun question because we've had such an amazing conversation about representation on television and This Is Us, but we heard through the grapevine.
Yes, we did.
That you are a lyricist. You are a rapper. You love to rap. You're from Brooklyn. Like, come on, New York City. So we have two little quick questions for you. One, top three MCs of all time.
Oh, man. Okay. Dang, y'all really gonna do this to me? You know, some people are like wicked, lyrically like wicked. And I, you know, you could go, let me do the disclaimer. Like, you know, the Jay-Z's and, you know, there's the Biggies and the Tupac's. Like, let's just put that on another. But I, you know, Andre 3000 for me.
Yes.
Is yes. Wicked.
Talk about it.
I feel like yes. That was an immediate connection. We are yes. Friends now in real life, Susan.
Okay.
Yes. That was it.
Wicked. And I think they're okay. And, oh man, lyrically, Kendrick is dope lyrically. Mm-hmm.
Kendrick's great.
But yep. But I mean, this is like on the low, and you kind of had to, I think, maybe be there in like 2007 when it was really 2007, 2008 when it was really popping off. But I remember when Lupe Fiasco first came out, and
I adore Lupe.
Oh, yes. Like, I was like, what is this lyrically? Like, if you listen, and I'm a big, like, listen to the words person. And I was like, did he just say what I think he said? Like, he put certain things together that I was like, yo, he, like, that's crazy.
So you're excited for this new J. Cole drop.
Oh, I heard the J. Cole drop. Oh. And I have to say, like, Nip Hustle is like, I'm mad that I wasn't up on that when it was really going down. But his new Jay-Z joint with Jay-Z is fire. It's a blaze. And then
so good.
You have the new J. Cole that just dropped, which is, yeah. I mean, you know, I love J. Cole too. Like, there are just those lyricists. Like I said, you got to get, you know, put the top people aside, because it almost feel like if you don't say them, you don't know.
Well, they're always going to be at the top.
Yeah,
exactly.
it just that is what it is. But man, those are some guys that I feel like if I was in a room with them, like the inspiration to like write something phenomenal would just be like upon me, like the dove on my shoulder. That came from on high.
Okay. Well, prepare yourself. The next time you come on our show, we're going to ask you to spit something for us. So you have, you've been warned.
We are waiting.
You have been warned.
Oh, man. I got it. I have it for you. So anytime. Yeah.
So we, here's the thing. We created this table to celebrate our Black faves. So you are one of our Black faves. So thank you for doing everything that you do.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Wowie. Thank you.
No, thank you. And before we run out of time, we just want you to brag and tell us what's next. Like, tell listeners what we need to look out for.
Okay. Well, the next thing I'm going to do, I am producing two projects, one of which I wrote. Ooh. And I'll leave it at that for now because I'd like it to be like, we're doing it right now. And then I'm back to This Is Us later this year to do our sixth season.
Which the final season, we just learned.
The final season, yeah. We just wrapped yesterday on season 5. And I'm doing the final season next season.
How are you feeling about it being the end? Is it time?
I think, you know, after discussion and just really knowing the vision that Dan has for it. I think we get the honor of like bringing a show to its fullness without having to kind of drag it out or do something that would feel like it wasn't really authentic to the show. We get to like see a beginning, middle, and end. And I'm really, I can't be anything but grateful for that. So this opportunity has been the opportunity of a lifetime, obviously. You know, the fact that I get to be her is like crazy. But yeah, there's a time and a season for everything. And this is our ending. And we are looking forward to giving you guys a season like no other.
Oh, I can feel myself crying already.
Well, we cannot wait. I know. Let me buy all the Kleenex in the world now.
Susan, can I just tell you, you had me and my sister on the couch yesterday crying at the end of last episode. Like,
I
tears.
And I am not a crier. This Is Us had me from the beginning.
I'm not a crier either. Trust and believe. I'm the one cast member who does not shed a tear. But like last night, that damn dance at the end. He's doing the Casey and the JoJo.
The Casey and JoJo.
Come on, man.
I was like, the love that is there. I was like, don't cry for your sister, girl. I started falling.
But the last question, we want to wrap up with you. And we always end our episode with an iteration of this question. If you would like to wrap it, I will not be mad. But fill in the blank for us, Susan, please. My Black is so dope because.
My Black is so dope because it's authentic.
Oh, yes, it is.
Period.
Period.
The end.
And that's on everything. Thank you.
Yeah, that is on everything.
That's
exactly.
On everything.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Amira, Kirby. This has been dope. Thank you guys for the seat at the table.
Yes.
I like the seat.
You do. You always have a seat at the table. The Table's Ours is produced by us, Kirby Dixon and Amira Lawali. This episode was also produced by Mikami Lin and Richard White and edited by Melissa Kaplan. Our researcher is Emma Fredericks. Our executive producers are Jesse Katz and Ted Butler. The Table's Ours was created by A&E. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.